Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. With the fiscal cliff, the debt ceiling, and spending cuts saturating the debate in Washington and the media, the ongoing unemployment crisis has been getting very little attention. And when it does get attention, it's usually connected to unemployment numbers coming out of the Labor Bureau. The latest report puts the official unemployment number at 7.8% compared to 5%. In early 2007. But when you look at the overall number and the number of people who are looking for work or full-time work or the number of people who've stopped looking for work, we are talking about over 23 million Americans. Now, we often hear that the economy is on the rebound, and President Obama does sometimes point to job creation. But what he does not mention is that most new jobs pay low wages, under $13.83 an hour, with no benefits. According to the National Employment Law Project, 3/5 of all jobs lost during the recession paid middle-income wages, while roughly 3/5 of the new jobs created during the recovery pay low wages. Both economic forces and government budget cuts are causing this deficit of good jobs, according to the study. And as a result, the number of working families struggling with poverty is on the rise, according to a new report by the Working Poor Project. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by focusing on jobs. What needs to be done to create good-paying jobs with benefits? Who is hiring? What are the unemployed facing? And what about those who are working but cannot make ends meet? What are we really facing here? Today, we're joined by Sylvia Allegretto, a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. And Sylvia joins us from her office in Berkeley. Hi, Sylvia. Good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
It's nice to have you.
Yes.
We are also joined by Arthur Delaney, staff reporter at the Huffington Post, where he writes about unemployment issues. In 2011, the Huffington Post published a collection of Arthur's stories as an ebook. It's called A People's History of the Great Recession. Hi, Arthur. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Wow, it's great to have you. So, Sylvia, with so much talk about the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling, how do you explain the lack of discussion in Washington about jobs when we're dealing with so many people out of work? And then this brand new study that just came out today by the Working Poor Project found that so many more working families are struggling with poverty because the jobs they're getting are low-wage jobs.
Well, Rose, I've been, trying to find the answer to that question for several years now. And the fact is that what happened, when we were at the worst point of this recession, and that was a few years ago when we lost, over 8 million jobs, at that point, the deficit hawks came swooping into D.C. They hijacked and actually won the debate to change the narrative from, the implosion of the economy and a jobs crisis into a crisis of deficits and debt. And that now is held for several years. But it makes absolutely no sense. And if you put the numbers into perspective, the U.S. is still down from the jobs that we lost during the recession that started 5 years ago now. 5 years ago. We're still down over 4 million jobs. 780,000 of those jobs that have been lost are here in California. So when you put the 4 million job loss together with 5 years of recession and a growing workforce over this 5 years, we have a shortfall, a jobs crisis of well over 10 million jobs, meaning that we need well over 10 million jobs to get the unemployment rate back to where we would like to have it, somewhere below 5%. And don't forget with the statistics you spoke about up front, the unemployment rate in California, after 4 years of double-digit unemployment, consecutive 4 years, month after month after month in California, double-digit unemployment, we finally just got down to 9.8%.
And is that the official government number?
That's right.
Okay, so what do you think it is? Because I know that you often you bring in other numbers, including people who maybe want full-time work but are working part-time and who want a better-paying job.
That's right, and you spoke of that up front, this government, this larger a measure of underutilized labor. Those are people who are marginally attached, people who have part-time work that want full-time work, people who have been discouraged. And like you said, that's probably more like 20, you know, million workers or so.
Right.
And then the people who are working, like you pointed out, are becoming reemployed, those who were unemployed. And we have a big problem with long-term unemployment, by the way. We can continue to have the struggles with long-term unemployed. But those who are becoming reemployed are finding job quality, their job quality has eroded. So they're finding jobs that are less pay and less benefits than the jobs that they've left. And unfortunately, this is what we're seeing in a very long-term trend. We're seeing stagnant wages, for instance, for average workers and low-wage workers that are a 30-year trend of stagnant and declining wages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just ratcheted up over this downturn. I mean, here in California, median household income over this recession has plummeted almost 14%, almost 14% since 2007. And I don't think anybody's bills have declined by that much.
Not at all. Well, and Arthur, so we went over the numbers, and what you do is you actually interview people about the struggles they're facing. What else do you think we need to know about jobs, the realities of jobs in this country?
Well, one thing that I like to remind people is that the broader measure of unemployment that you mentioned is also a government number. So I promise we're not, the government's not trying to suppress that. It comes out alongside the more familiar unemployment rate that's lower. But I think you guys really hit the most salient points. I love pointing out that the wages of the jobs that are being created since we started this not-so-great recovery mm-hmm. are low, and they're lower than the wages of the jobs that we lost.
Right.
And also that people who were displaced from jobs during the Great Recession, who are now reemployed, are, you know, a majority of them getting new jobs that pay less than the ones we lost. And that's something that I find constantly. I've interviewed dozens of people who were unemployed for prolonged periods of time, and they've returned to work and have worse jobs. You know, they'll be doing something in retail, whereas previously they were managers or had more prestigious jobs. And it's tough. It's especially tough on people in the baby boom generation who are particularly vulnerable to long-term unemployment, because they've spent their whole lives thinking that if they just keep working hard like they're doing, they'll be set for life. Mm. And then you're about to approach retirement, and the rules change right under your feet. It's pretty discouraging.
Well, and so talk a little bit more about this, because I often on the show, whenever we talk about jobs, bring up the fact that the majority of the jobs that are being created are low wage. Yet this isn't getting much attention, that we are really moving into this service economy. So we're talking about waitressing jobs, retail, and these jobs just don't pay well. I mean, according to this study by the National Employment Law Project, the average waiter or waitress gets about $7.69 an hour. The median food service worker gets $10 an hour. And this is where the majority of the jobs are being created. So, Arthur, I mean, is this what's in store in the years to come?
Well, this is something that President Obama isn't silent about. I think in every big speech he makes, his victory speech in Chicago in November, every State of the Union, including probably the next one, he talks about this idea that the promise of America, the promise of the American dream, which is that if you work hard and you're a decent person, you can have economic security and a decent retirement, is under threat. And he knows it's not just because of the Great Recession. The Great Recession did exacerbate this, but like your other guest said, it's something that's been going on for decades. And so the president's aware of it. However, there's not much it looks like the administration is trying to do about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're paying attention to what they're talking about, his first priority in the second term is immigration and then gun control. Jobs is always in the background. And because they've got so much opposition in Congress, it seems as though there's no big, bold solution around the corner. They're going to continue to take a piecemeal approach.
Yeah, Rose, can I jump in here?
Please.
He's making some really great, great comments. And I would just say one thing that, you know, should absolutely be on the table and done overnight is to pass a higher minimum wage.
Mm.
And the waiters and waitresses, and this is an industry, the restaurant industry in the U.S., and particularly here in California, is absolutely booming. One good thing about California is we do not allow what is called a tip credit. Mm-hmm. So the federal minimum wage is $2.13 an hour. Stick with me here, because I'm not making this up. The federal sub-minimum wage for tipped workers is $2.13 an hour and has been so for 22 years. So one, and we don't have a tip credit in California, so the California restaurant workers actually get the state minimum wage at least, so they get at least $8 an hour, which is a good thing, even though our minimum wage should be increased also. The $2.13 an hour sub-minimum wage must be changed. I just cannot fathom why this is not front page news, this idea that we have this booming industry that absolutely is filled with workers who are at the poverty level and below. And so that's one very easy thing that we can do, is raise the sub-minimum wage, and also the regular minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. It's simply not enough. And given all the increase in inequality over the last 30 years, this is one of the reasons why. We have this huge lobbyists that go to Washington for the restaurant industry and businesses and the Chamber of Commerce to keep wages so low for American workers. And it's just not good for America.
And there's also, when you talk about the minimum wage, Sylvia, you often hear that it's, the young workers who make minimum wage. But don't they, people under 25 represent about one-fifth?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, something like a third of minimum wage workers are over 30, 30 years old, I believe. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Sure, minimum wage workers are disproportionately young workers, but those young workers are trying to put themselves through school.
Right.
They're in families that aren't necessarily, solid middle-class families. They're working because they have to work for a reason. So this idea, just because there are a lot of young minimum wage workers, that they don't need the money is just simply not true, especially what is going on with costs of education. But yes, there are a lot of working families who are just hovering around the poverty level at minimum wage. So one thing we need to do is pass, policies that strengthen job quality, not just wages, but also job quality, meaning we should have sick pay. Look at all the people. The flu has hit this country like a storm, right? And there's so many sick folks out there that do not have any paid sick leave. So they have to either go to work, where this, it helps to spread this flu like wildfire, or they simply have to not get paid. I mean, this is not a good, system. We have to have sick care. We have to have, hopefully, it would be nice to have vacation pay. We're the only developed country in the world that doesn't have any mandated vacation pay. We have to make these jobs better jobs.
Arthur, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think an important statistic when you're talking about the restaurant industry, this is 10% of the American workforce. Mm-hmm. And 90% of the people who work in this industry don't have health insurance. This is something, though, that's going to change starting next year, right? Because the Affordable Care Act will kick in, and presumably these people should be able to buy health insurance from exchanges in their states, and if they can't afford it, they'll be able to get subsidies for the federal government. So it could be that things look more hopeful in this sector later on, though, of course, there are people who doubt that it'll go so smoothly.
That is Arthur Delaney, staff reporter at the Huffington Post, where he writes about unemployment. In 2011, the Huffington Post published a collection of his stories as an e-book, A People's History of the Great Recession. We're also joined by Sylvia Allegretto, a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. And on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about jobs. Where's the real conversation about what it will take to create not only just jobs, but good-paying jobs with maybe some benefits? Because right now we've got over 23 million people looking for work, and then the majority of the jobs that are being created pay less than $13.83 an hour with absolutely no benefits. And as a result, the number of working families struggling with poverty is on the rise. This is according to a new report that just came out by the Working Poor Project. And we'd love to hear from you on this very important issue. What has your experience been like? Are you looking for work? Do you have part-time work and you want full-time work? Just what is it like out there right now? And if you're hiring, Where are you hiring? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. As Sylvia said, in California, the official unemployment rate is now 9.8%, and median income has plummeted 14% since 2007. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Gus in Richmond. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Actually, GS, but
oh, GS.
That will do. It's no matter. Well, starting at the top, yes, even the president just the other day said we need jobs, not deficit reduction. The priorities are all screwed up in that sense to help us finish getting up out of this great recession we've been in since, like, 2007. I believe one important thing we should do to help get this problem solved is to put the brakes on people taking taxable money offshore and use some of that money being kept in this country to be used to fund perhaps part of something like a new renewal of the Civilian Conservation Corps. A lot of people enjoy doing that work, and it's good, healthy work. But more importantly, a lot of corporations, U.S. corporations, have shipped a ridiculous amount of jobs off to other countries,
right,
partly because they can pay lower wages in other countries. And I think that's had a kind of a side effect back here. Say, well, you know, why should we pay you $15 an hour? We can pay somebody in the Philippines $9. But I think in the long run, the real problem with adding all the new jobs is that many of the potential workers have not received a good enough education to tackle the higher paying, far more interesting jobs in science, engineering, green energy, and so forth. I would like to see this state and this whole country invest in its long-term future by paying all or at least a far larger share of the tuition it will be necessary to support those who will strive to educate themselves for the jobs of the future. That's my...
Well, you brought up a number of points there. And Sylvia, on the offshoring jobs, I've been reading a lot of articles about multinationals wanting to move to Vietnam because the Chinese are actually demanding a decent salary. Are these jobs coming back? What's your read on that? Any of these jobs that have moved offshore?
Well, I think, you know, what we're seeing, because, you know, wages are rising in places like China, I think, which is a good thing. We do see some of the manufacturing. We have gotten a boost in manufacturing in the U.S. Unfortunately, I think most of the manufacturing moving forward is going to be done more and more and more. It's going to be automated. Of course, we've been in a long-term, automation of the manufacturing sector. But a lot of the manufacturing jobs that are coming on board are... you know, workers are going to need to know how to operate pretty complicated computers and machinery. You know, instead of the old-time machinery, they're operating computers and the automation of the process. But, you know, that's a good thing if we bring these jobs back, and that's we do need to train the workers to be able to do these types of jobs. And I do worry about some of the skills mismatch, meaning that, you know, you have employers who can't find workers who have the right skills. But I still think overwhelmingly that's not the biggest problem that we have right now because, you know, like we've talked about, most of the jobs coming on board, you know, they if you look at BLS, again, this is a report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics showing that the majority of jobs coming on board in the next 10, 20 years are basically jobs that need almost no education and short-term on-the-job training, such as restaurant work.
Hmm. And what about GS's comment about education and at a time when tuition is actually going up?
Yeah, I think we're going to see problems with education going forward that are directly related to the massive cuts that we made in education over the last 5 years. One of the statistics when I talk about jobs that's pretty amazing is that in California, we had massive austerity here because we were trying to balance the budget. And so we cut over 150,000 government jobs here, most of them in education, a lot of them teachers. I mean, one thing that I think that should be happening is that the government should be putting the government workers that have been laid off and let go over this downturn, put them back to work. That's one of the quickest and easiest things that we could do. But again, that has not been front and center. What's front and center is, you know, we have this idea that it's a good thing that we've lost all these teachers and firemen and policemen, like where I'm from in Oakland, California, where, you know, we're running on very few policemen compared to what we had before and what we actually need. We're a couple hundred short. This isn't a good thing. This austerity comes at a price, and I think we'll see that price moving, you know, being paid moving forward, and part of it is going to be in the education of our youth.
All right, well, thank you for the call, GS. And before we get to other callers, Arthur, can you talk a little bit about the people that you interview? What are the realities out there, especially for people who have been out of work for a long time? What is their situation like?
One thing that's interesting with the longest term unemployed, you know, people who've been out of work 99 weeks or longer, is that for the first time in the last 2 years, the government's count of them is starting to go down. So for the past 2 years, it averaged just shy of 2 million people who'd been out of that work that long. And in the last quarter of 2012, it declined to 1.5 million. And we don't know if that's a sign that those people are finding jobs or giving up on their search altogether, leaving the labor force, no longer looking for jobs, even though they're still unemployed. But because they're not looking, they don't count officially as unemployed anymore. And it's kind of distressing. When you're out of work that long, you can become really isolated. You can lose friends. Mm. Family relationships can deteriorate. And you can develop some extreme anxiety. And I've talked to a lot of people who are in that situation.
And in your latest piece, you say there seems to be less interest in 99ers today than there was, say, last year. You write that major newspapers ran stories including the term 99ers and unemployment 12 times last year, 68 times in 2010, but it's greatly dwindled since then.
Yeah, and that is a reflection of what Sylvia was very astutely saying at the top of the show, that there is a relentless campaign to focus on debt and deficits. It's the leader of it is probably Pete Peterson, who's in charge of the campaign to fix the debt. And these are billionaires, ostensibly bipartisan billionaires, but when you really look at them, it's mostly Republicans, and they want the United States government to start spending less money. And they pose as deficit hawks often, but what we're really talking about is spending hawks. And when it's a question of taxes going up, they say no. Just stop spending money on stuff. And that's why I think that's why the conversation is all about deficits. It really is because people are making it that way. And not, it doesn't reflect, you know, what's going on around the country.
And you interviewed Alex Swingle, a New York City resident who's been out of work since losing his credit analyst job in 2010, saying, "I think that mentally and physically it's taking a toll on me. Problems with sleeping, insomnia, it's kind of nerve-wracking. You feel like you're being beaten up. Anxiety, depression, you have no idea what your future is."
And that's what everyone says, or almost everyone, at least the people who reach out to me or who, when I reach out to them, they're willing to be interviewed and be candid about how they feel. It's always that kind of anxiety and despair. Some people, of course, handle it better than others, but I think Alex's feelings are pretty normal when you've been out of work that long.
And you can find Arthur Delaney's latest piece, Long-Term Unemployed, Winning Jobs or Giving Up, at yourcallradio.org. And it's our Agenda for a New Economy series on today's Your Call. We are talking about jobs. What will it take to create good-paying jobs with benefits, as most jobs that are being created right now pay less than $13.30 an hour with no benefits? And we'd love to hear you, what's your experience been like, and who's actually hiring right now. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. If you prefer to write rather than call, please feel free to send a question or comment via email. Here's the email address, feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about reconciliation. The Catholic Diocese in Monterey recently held a reconciliation mass for a band of Ohlone Indians to publicly acknowledge and apologize for the church's abuse of Native peoples during the mission era. So what is the power of a public apology? Is it enough? And what does reconciliation mean to you? That's on tomorrow's show. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the job crisis. And it is a crisis. We've got 23 million people looking for work. The majority of the new jobs that are being created pay under $13.83 an hour with no benefits. And as a result, the number of working families struggling with poverty is on the rise. This is according to a new report by the Working Poor Project. And we're talking about these issues today with Arthur Delaney, staff reporter with the Huffington Post. He is author of the ebook, A People's History of the Great Recession. Sylvia Allegretto is a labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. And we'd love to hear from you. What stories would you like to share with us about what your experience has been in trying to find work, full-time work, a good-paying job that you actually enjoy with benefits? We've got full lines right now, but we'll have a line open in a couple minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Jeff in Oakland. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going today?
Good, thank you. How
are
you?
I've been unemployed probably for like 3-4 years now, and when I first lost my job, I was on unemployment for, 2 years, and this is when they were starting the first rounds of extensions, and I couldn't even imagine, like trying to get a job, and that was a decent corporate job, so I was getting, like, $1,200 every 2 weeks.
Wow.
So now I'm in that point where I have, like, no credit, nothing, is going on, and now my the way I spend has changed to a full cash. Basically, my own is just a full cash budget.
And so, what do you do, Jeff?
I do have a paying job, but I'm 1099. I got to pay my taxes at the end of the year. I don't make a lot of money as it is. On paper, I make like $6,000. Wow. And I work for this little company in San Francisco called Urban Farm Grills, and it's basic manufacturing of pots and wreaths and landscape installation, but it sucks, but it's a great job. I have to commute every day to the city, but it's a job, and the $300 that I make allows me to contribute with my wife, who has a full-time job, and I have a 10-month-old baby. And it's just you just learn to change your lifestyle, and it sucks. And I ask my dad, who's very wealthy, and I go, so what am I supposed to do, Dad? And he's like, well, you got to go get educated. I'm like, well, now I got to go impoverish myself even more by incurring a bunch of debt just to go to school, get skills to get a slightly better paying job.
Right.
It's not worth the money. The numbers don't add up for me. So what I'm saying is the economy needs to create the jobs, but it's like me, I want to work. Somebody offered me a job right now to go dig a trench in the middle of the hills, just dig it and keep digging it, I'd dig a trench.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is a lot of people want to work. I mean, according to this new Working Poor Project report, they interviewed families that have 2 or 3 jobs. I mean, they want to work, and they're still having a hard time making ends meet.
I don't care about the pay. I just want the hours. If you're paying me $10 an hour to work 40 hours, I know that I can count on $800 a month. And I know that $800 is going to go way more than a job that I don't know what my hours are, where the jobs are,
right,
when the cash is coming in, this and that.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Jeff. You want to respond, Arthur?
Yeah, I think Jeff gives us an opportunity to make a useful point, which is that people should resist the idea that there's persistent unemployment because unemployed people just refuse to take jobs that are available, but they consider beneath them, beneath their dignity. A great illustration of this is when McDonald's had a job fair. They wanted to fill 60,000 positions on what they called a national hiring day in 2011. They had more than 1 million people show up.
Wow.
So
a million.
Yeah. So
for McDonald's jobs.
People will take what's out there. And one reason there is persistently high long-term unemployment is that there's well-documented and it's starting to be pretty well-studied, this phenomenon of employers just not wanting long-term unemployed workers, because when there's it's not as if it's a static number of 12 million people who are out of work from 1 month to the next. There's churn, and there's churn among the short-term unemployed, and those are the ones who are more likely to get hired. So that's why we've got that's part of the reason we've got historic long-term unemployment, and millions of people kind of get stranded.
Right. What's the status of unemployment benefits right now?
Well, this is another thing that I suspect has contributed to some of the decline in the super long-term unemployment, because unemployment insurance is not as generous as it used to be. For a couple years in 2010 and through 2011, it could last up to 99 weeks. And earlier this year, they made it much shorter. The maximum is 73 weeks, and that's only available in the 9 states where unemployment is above a certain point. The unemployment rate is above a certain point. So it's not like it used to be where you heard people railing on the 99 weeks going on forever. It's much shorter, and the duration automatically cuts itself down as unemployment rates in states trickle down across the country.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for calling in and sharing your story. And we have full lines, so let's go through a few callers, and then we'll get responses from Arthur Delaney and Sylvia Allegretto. Let's hear from Drew in San Francisco. Hi, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm another affected, marginally employed person. I'm currently a dog walker, and I give great thanks for my job. My employers treat me very well. I'm sorry to get upset, but... I have a master's degree. I speak Japanese fluently. I lived in Japan for 15 years. I have an incredible record of success, and I can't find a job. Mm. And I haven't been able to find a job for 4 years since I came back to the United States for health reasons. And there's such an emphasis on education. Then why can't I find a job? If you need to experience, well, I've got experience. I find here in San Francisco, there's this huge, because I work in the venture community, and, you know, I've done several startups, and, it's like now that I'm over 40, nobody wants to talk to me anymore. It's like you have to be 28, and, and it's weird to go to, the one panelist was talking about how you isolate, and you just cut yourself off from the world more and more, because it's just so embarrassing. Mm. I don't want to tell anybody what I do. And, I don't have any friends anymore. I don't go out anymore. I don't talk to anybody anymore. It's just so hard.
Hang in there, man. I think it will get better for you. I think what you're saying is true, though, and you're not the only one in that situation. I think that's an important thing for unemployed people to remember.
Yeah, and I think also it seems like aren't there groups to like networking groups, support groups for people like Drew? I'm sure there are a lot in the Bay Area.
Yeah, there are such things as job clubs.
Uh huh.
Where unemployed people get together, and I know this is in every city where you can talk to people who, without even having a conversation with them, you know that they know what you're going through, or at least they understand a lot of it.
Yeah, and also, Drew, I think it would help to meet people who are in your situation, just to know you're not alone. There's also a lot of really good meetup groups, like networking groups. Maybe you can find one that focuses on your field. So check that out, and we'll put some links on our website, yourcallradio.org. And thank you for calling, and good luck in your search. Let's go next to Bruce in Monterey. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Just briefly, my background, I spent 30 years in high tech in Silicon Valley working for Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies in their IT and manufacturing areas. And I constantly saw jobs being rapidly shifted overseas. Even startups that had only been in business for less than 2 years would start replacing American engineers that were costing them $45,000 a year plus benefits with an engineer in Taiwan or India that was costing them $14,000 a year and no benefits. So they didn't even wait time to have traction. And then there were large companies that would take entire network support departments and replace all these 50-year-old workers with H-1B visa people, which the dirty little secret on that is that you've got all these people that are indentured servants. They can't go work for another company, so they're paid half the going rate. So you have a lot of these sort of structural things going on where good jobs that are created are then shipped overseas. And the structural things that are keeping this going are the lack of unions, decline of unions. You don't have the right to bargain for a job. And very different in this country compared to Germany, which is very different, is that Germany, you have to have workers on your board of directors. And when that happens, you don't have the good-paying jobs shipped overseas. Huh. The menial jobs get shipped overseas. So you have companies like BMW and others that basically have had, you know, their workers are more and more designers and marketing people, but they ship the low, truly low-paying jobs, the menial jobs overseas. In our case, we don't do that. We ship high-tech jobs, and knowledge with it overseas. And that's not going to change as long as boards are focused on maximizing profits. They're not concerned about jobs or the health of the economy. It's not their focus. Hmm. And it's a mistake to even think that it is. You know, right now, the other thing that we've had is, of course, the big, huge shift in wealth. And when you take all wealth from workers and give it to the management at the top, they put their money into assets. Well, assets just sit there. So you need maybe more gardeners or more people to wash your cars, but you don't put it into products, and products are what drive the economy.
So, Bruce, you clearly have a lot of experience in this. Where do you see this going in the coming years?
I see it's following much like the United Kingdom under Thatcher, where the trickle-down economics isn't going to change things. Mm. You're going to have this stagnation of the economy, where you have fewer people able to produce goods and services, and there won't be that need. So it's going to be the stratification. I see it's going back to a 1920s type of economy, or what you call a banana republic economy, where you have a low class and lower class, and you have an upper class and virtually no middle class. And we're going to that now, where a few middle class jobs or attorneys are working in Wall Street, and those aren't really jobs that add value to the economy.
Well, thank you so much for calling. And that brings up wealth distribution. And Sylvia, data shows that the top 20% of Americans receive 48% of all income, while those in the bottom 20% receive less than 5%. And in the 70s and 80s, it was, or I should say 60s and 70s, it was much more equitable. What are your thoughts about Bruce's last line about a banana republic? Do you think it's going to get that bad?
Well, we do know that we have an ever increasing wealth divide. And again, it looks like coming out of the Great Recession, things have actually gotten worse. So for instance, when you look at a colleague of mine here looked at when the economy started finally growing again, slowly but growing again in 2009 and 2010, he found that 93% of all the gains of that expanding economic pie, almost the entire expansion, 93%, went to the top 1%. So we do have inequality at the levels about the highest that we've ever had, which was around the 1920s or so. And this absolutely is finally getting some airtime over the last few years. It's been something that has been going on again for the last 30 years is when it's really gotten the worst, and it's been growing exponentially recently. But this is one of the biggest problems that we have, this idea that you can get up, you know, play by the rules, get an education, work hard all of your life, and that you'll find some amount of economic security. That's just simply not becoming feasible for so many people now. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that all the gains in a growing economy are not going to, by the way, extremely productive workers. We have some of the most productive workers in the world, and productivity has gone through the roof over the last 30 years. But they're not enjoying any of those gains. And it has a lot to do with what your caller was just speaking about, the fact that we don't have unions anymore, that workers do not have a say, that we don't have our government enforcing our work rules. We should be making them stronger, not weaker. We need more unionization. They're trying to crush now government workers because they're kind of the last bastion of unionization, strong unions, and quite frankly, of good middle-class jobs. But even that has been eroded away significantly over this downturn because of all the concessions that the unions had to give into and all the jobs, the government jobs that were lost over this downturn. But the idea that you can play by the rules, that you have a decent living, that you have some health care, and that you have some in retirement is just being eroded away at alarming rates. I was just hearing today that that people that are taking money out of their 401ks is up 12% over last year.
Wow.
this is not good news because, again, we're talking about, you know, kind of rolling back some Social Security. They want to cut some of the Social Security payments going into the future. And if you don't have savings, and we don't have a lot of savings, because our paychecks haven't gone anywhere.
Right.
I mean, if your paycheck's not going anywhere and you're being asked to pay more for health care, being asked to pay more for your retirement, if you even have those benefits, I just don't know how that's going to work. And now with people losing their homes to the tune that they did over the last 5 years, they've depleted their savings. Many were unemployed, or at least someone in their family was unemployed for some period of time over the last 5 years, and now they're dipping into their 401ks. Well, what does that mean for them when they go to retire?
Right.
It means they're not going to have the retirement that they had hoped to have.
That is Sylvia Allegretto, labor economist and co-chair of the Center on Wage and Employment Dynamics at UC Berkeley. We're also joined on today's Your Call by Arthur Delaney, staff reporter with the Huffington Post, author of the e-book, A People's History of the Great Recession. Today, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the job crisis, the ongoing job crisis. And we've got full lines. Let's go through a few callers and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex. Hello, Alex. Let's go next to... Are we going to a next caller? Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dennis from Santa Cruz. I am so glad you're having this program because it is as your guests have spoken, it's a long-term, decades-old problem that's finally coming to fruition. And it's going to take changes in various sectors of the economy and the American public to recognize what needs to be done. And the export of jobs, the devolution of our economy, it'll require a new social contract between the working class and the ruling class and the managerial class. And it's a tremendous, tremendous issue that no one is addressing politically. And no one has the courage to even broach these discussions. This is one of the first and important beginnings. Hopefully people will start to write their representatives and senators and begin this sort of discussion that needs to happen.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking about this at our editorial meeting yesterday. And when the downturn economic crisis began, I mean, you even had conversations sort of like this on CNBC about capitalism and alternatives to capitalism. And we started hearing a lot of conversations about co-ops, about a different economy, about, you know, community banks. But that has largely disappeared. And Lisa just writes in saying that you've got to talk about the larger picture here. These jobs are not going to come back. We need to plan for a future when we're paid by a different different model. We live by barter, for example, or another economic system, because capitalism will no longer be the system that will be providing jobs for any of us. What are your thoughts about that, Sylvia?
Well, I think this is a good discussion to have. And I talk a lot about this myth of the free market. I mean, it's always kind of silly when I listen to people talking about the market, because what you normally hear is, it's the free market. We need the free market. When you talk about unemployment benefits or Medicare or Medicaid, Social Security or anything, which we've always had mixed markets, mixed of some social types of programs and a free market. But politically speaking, when you talk about anything to do with the workers, a minimum wage or what have you, benefits, health care, all of a sudden it's socialism.
Right.
But anything else is the free market just out there working. And it just happens to, you know, grab all the money from the workers and gives it to all the rich people. No, that just doesn't happen. There's no free market. The outcomes that we're seeing now, that we've been seeing over the last 30 years, are because we do not actually have a free market. We have a market that works in favor of capitalism and of capital, not for the majority of workers. And all the rules and regulations that are put into place, again, there's no kind of free market and visible hand out there doing this. I mean, for instance, we have a 15% capital gains rate. Now, it didn't come down from on high. It's a policy that we have, that we're talking about a marginal tax rate in the 30s, going from 35 to 39%, is ludicrous in my mind. Why aren't we talking about a marginal tax rate of 50 or 60 or 70 or 80%? But they have us, you know, with the straw man over here. Look at over here. You know, let's go from 35% to 39%. That just makes no difference at all, almost.
Yeah, Elvis Presley paid 90%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so and they don't want us to talk about the capital gains because that's where the rich people really make all of their money, and why someone like Mitt Romney only paid about 14% effective tax rate, even though he's a multimillionaire, right? It's really important to know that to not accept this notion that there's some free market out there that's just working. This market has been bought and sold by the plutocracy, and the outcomes are a direct result from it.
So there's a couple things going on. We've got to talk about these larger questions and continue talking about alternatives. But then you also have to talk about what's going on the ground, and the fact is people need to make a decent wage so they can make ends meet. And so I'd like to welcome our next guest to really talk about what is available out there in terms of jobs right now. And Sharon Williams is joining us. She's executive director of Job Train. This is a Menlo Park-based nonprofit job training and career placement organization that serves 8,000 low-income people annually. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what are you seeing on the ground out there? I mean, we still have full lines with people who want to talk about their personal stories of not being able to find jobs. What are you seeing right now?
Right, well, we are an organization that has traditionally served people, you know, help people get jobs who have a hard time getting a job because of all their barriers. They're returning parolees, they've been welfare moms, they're in recovery from drugs and alcohol. But I've noticed a change, and certainly when the recession hit, we were just inundated with people who had just lost their jobs and could not believe it was happening to them. And so we welcomed them. We've done everything we can to help them start new careers. Now, one of the things that I've noticed recently in our population is that we have many older people, many people, say, in their 60s, who, you know, would normally have just retired. Who can't afford to retire now. So they're coming back, somebody maybe who worked in as a laborer, as a carpenter, as, you know, in some physically demanding field, who comes back now and says, well, gee, a new career. And the challenge is that they built up in the trades, for example, to very high salaries, very high wages. And starting over in a new career would require them to start at a lower wage. Even if we look at the classes that we have, the training that we do here at Job Train, the laborers, the average wage is for a brand new starting out laborer as an apprentice is over $18 an hour. But in the courses like office skills, it's you know, not it's under 16, and if you look at culinary arts, it's just about $12 an hour. So those are difficult changes and adjustments for people to make.
And so we were talking about the fact, like you said, a lot of these jobs are low wage, resulting in working families struggling with poverty. What major changes have you seen over the past 4 years? I mean, the politicians are saying that there's a recovery. We're getting emails from a number of listeners that say it sounds like this is definitely not a recovery.
Well, in some ways, I agree that there is a recovery. I was approached last week, for example, by a very good construction company, Rudolph and Sutton, who says they have so many building projects going on right now. They need more office workers. They need more construction workers. So I'm seeing it starting to open up for people. But when you see when people say, oh, well, look at all these thousands and thousands of jobs that are open and nobody to fill them, well, that's because those are very low skill, very low wage jobs. And that's right. There is nobody. So certainly living in the Bay Area, there are not people who can afford to take those low wage jobs and to make it. I'm also seeing that more teenagers seem to be working to contribute to their household incomes than before, and we're training a lot of young people here. It's kind of like we shifted somewhat from focusing on the people who are in their early 30s, late 20s, to a lot more older people and younger people.
What advice do you have for people who are struggling to find work?
My advice is that you get some help, because there's a big change. Probably many of them haven't applied for work for years, and there's a difference in how resumes are screened now. There's and you have to do things online. So I would suggest that every community has some place to go where you can get help with resumes, usually through the Workforce Investment Board and their programs, but there are nonprofits that help with that, community colleges. And I think that
you know, Sharon, it sounds like we need to have you back and maybe just do a How to Get a Job 101 show, because it seems like there are so many changes going on right now. And people really need to adapt, and I think that would be really useful, because we're just getting slammed with emails and phone calls from people who are out of work.
Right.
And Sylvia, a final thoughts from you, about 30 seconds?
Well, I'd like to, Arthur was talking about the fact that we have, some of this narrative over the last few years is that we have all these lazy workers.
Mm.
And I think with his example of, the McDonald's job opening, we had the same thing here when Target opened in Oakland for a couple hundred jobs. Tens of thousands of people showed up. The fact is, people do want to work. They certainly don't want to work for $8 an hour, but they do, even when they shouldn't, because they probably are, so many people are underemployed. And I would also say that even though school is tough, for those who can pursue school, to be smart about, how they're investing in school. But, you are better off having a degree than not having a degree. That's certainly still true, even though education doesn't protect you from these downturns as much as they used to. So school's still something to think about investing in. But I would say that, it's just incalculable, the
All
amount
right.
of damage that has been done over these last 5 years.
Well, we will definitely continue following this. Sylvia Allegretto, labor economist at UC Berkeley, Arthur Delaney, staff reporter with the Huffington Post, author of A People's History of the Great Recession, and Sharon Williams is executive director of the Menlo-based Job Train. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for your emails and phone calls. We will continue this conversation. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up on tomorrow's Your Call. What is the power of reconciliation? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about how people come to terms with past atrocities. The Catholic Diocese in Monterey recently held a reconciliation mass for a band of Ohlone Indians to publicly acknowledge and apologize for the church's abuse of Native peoples during the mission era. What is the power of a public apology? Is it enough? And what does reconciliation mean to you? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.